Hey. Brian says he likes my intro. So here, folks, is the Digital Engagement Forecast with your hosts, Hemming Nelson.
And I'm Brian Kessler.
And today we're talking to Allison Kappen. She's the founder of Red Campaign, who is a nonprofit digital campaign support development. What do you call Red Campaign?
Creative consultant. they're a little strategic
strategy and development
consulting thing. Agency down in DuPont Circle. I think a big part of our conversation, though, is we talk a little bit about a Red Campaign, but I think we end up spending a lot of time talking about Women Who Tech and the startup she's working with to help promote women in entrepreneurial positions, which was really fun. And I think the timing was that night they had a big contest that she had carved out a few hours to come jump on the podcast, but submissions were due that night, and so active submissions for some I don't know if it's grant money or just outright prize money were coming in.
Yeah, Allison was named by Fast Company as one of the most influential women in tech. And she, it was tough getting her on the calendar. I think she probably rescheduled us like four times. And when we met her, it was obvious why. She is moving a million miles an hour, and she does about 1,000 things a day. So luckily, we were able to hear about 500 of them in the time she spent with us. And it was super exciting for us to talk to her. And of course, this episode of The Forecast, like all the others, sponsored by Charity Engine.
If your CRM is driving you to drink, give Charity Engine a call.
And that's charityengine.net. Don't go to .com because it's going to be some other site which is going to confuse you. And here's our great conversation with Allison.
So I'll give you a little bit of background about Women Who Tech. We started about 7 years ago, sure, as a way to really champion women in technology. I'm sure you both have been to a lot of technology conferences where you go to the conference and you see all these panels and keynotes comprised.
It's a bunch of people like us.
Right, that look exactly like you.
They look more like him these days with the beards and the
scraggly bunch.
Yeah.
And as if, you know, we women in technology didn't exist. And so we were really frustrated about that, and there were a lot of conversations behind closed doors, always talking about that frustration. And I said to myself, well, rather than continuing these conversations behind closed doors, I think we actually need to do something about it. And that was the catalyst for starting Women Who Tech. And our signature event that we launched with was called the Women Who Tech Telesummit, and it was just like a conference, but it happened online. You could pick and choose which panels you wanted to go to, and it had awesome women in technology, as well as entrepreneurs, women like Arianna Huffington, women like Lisa Stone of Blogger, Rashmi Sinha, co-founder of SlideShare, which was acquired about 2 years ago by LinkedIn, which was super exciting for them. And now, 7 years later, we were taking a look at the number of women in tech organizations that have risen over the years, which is incredible. So you have like Girls Who Code and Girl Develop It. But while we are seeing progress and there's some wonderful work being done, we were also taking a look at the landscape. Well, what else isn't being addressed that we can start taking a look at and tackling? And the very first thing that came to mind was the lack of funding for women-led startups. About 7% of investor money goes to women-led startups, and the rest goes to men, and that number hasn't budged in about 10 years. So clearly we have a problem.
And that number probably reflects the amount of women who work at a lot of the firms that provide the funding.
Even less. I mean, there is less investors. I think it's about like 3% of investors are women that actually work at these firms. So the number is pretty, pretty small.
Now, when I think about you, I think about you in the nonprofit space. And we've never met, but I've seen your name in, you know, Progressive Exchange and M10
sure.
and those kinds of places.
Sure.
But this, the Women's Startup Challenge, seems a little bit more like sort of New York focused and a little bit outside of the realm that we probably travel in or that I associate you with.
So I think it's an actual extension of a lot of the work that I've been doing, which is championing. We do a lot of work with women's organizations here at RAD Campaign. Mm-hmm. And in order for us to solve the world's biggest problems, we can come at it from a nonprofit perspective, which has a very, very unique set of challenges and strapped for funding. And then we can also come at it from a startup environment and creating products that are truly solving problems for people and this entire planet. So For me personally, it's a natural extension of what we've been doing here at RAD Campaign. And also working on gender equity is something that is we're pretty passionate about here at RAD. So I think it fits in really nicely. Today is the deadline for the Startup Challenge. It's super, super exciting. We have, just some game-changing startups that have entered. By the time this podcast comes out, I think it'll be interesting to see who makes the top 10, what the investors think. I'm not a judge.
How does the contest work? So you get the submissions. There's a first mm-hmm. Judges review it, and then there's like a first round of
So there's a short application that we ask startups to fill out, talking about their elevator pitch, their go-to-market strategy, their revenue, projected revenue. And we have a group of investors and technology experts and serial entrepreneurs that will come in starting tomorrow, and they will begin to score the applications based on the viability of their startup to rapidly scale, at their go-to-market strategy. And
is this anything like the Shark Tank?
It is actually pretty much like the Shark Tank.
Are there any women judges in there? I've never watched
there
the
are.
Show.
There okay. are. There's usually two.
Are these startups actually startups, or are they potentially somebody that has an idea for
mm-hmm.
a startup?
That's a great question.
You know, they're just one person looking to get out of their current job, and they're making the pitch. Well,
yeah.
What's kind of the makeup? And also, I was curious, what's the geographic makeup? Where are a lot mm-hmm. of these applications coming from?
Sure. So I'll answer your first question. It is a mix in terms of startups that are at the concept phase and startups that have already launched their product and are generating revenue and have a pretty extensive user base. So it's definitely a mix. I can't tell you right now because we haven't the applications haven't closed.
But it is a mix, so they're not.
Oh, it's absolutely a mix. Yeah,
that's pretty
very
cool.
Different stages. And this is our second Women's Startup Challenge, and this one is different than our last one. Our last one was a national challenge, so we recruited from all over the country, and we started with a crowdfunding campaign, because we wanted each participating woman-led startup to walk away with money, even if they didn't get to be part of the final 12 or become a grand prize winner and win the $50,000, they at least walked away with some money for their startup via their crowdfunding campaign. After the startup challenge, we went back to our community and we asked, hey, we're going to be scaling this. We've received more funding. What would you all like to see next? And some of the ideas that we got back was to focus on regional challenges. So this is our first Northeast regional challenge. So the startups are coming all from the Northeast region. And it's just incredibly exciting. I was just talking with some of our team to see the differences between our national challenge and our Northeast challenge. We're getting, obviously, a lot of fashion tech startups because mm-hmm. our... Mm-hmm. We're getting a ton of startups from New York, and I think part of the reason is our pitch competition is going to be based in New York City at Microsoft and Times Square, so we're definitely pulling a lot from the fashion tech industry, but we're also getting a lot of financial tech, education tech, and it really just spans the gamut, just some really innovative, creative ideas, and we're super excited to...
It sounds like you're going to be franchising this competition soon.
We are. We're actually thinking about, you know, we're experimenting with the regional challenge, and sometime in the next year, I think we're going to launch a World Women's Startup Challenge.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Why start in the Northeast?
So there are technology hubs that are really focused in the Northeast and then obviously on the West Coast. And so that's where we wanted to start. Obviously, that's a lot closer to me in terms of being able to travel and meet with different investors that are going to be supporting the challenge. And so we started with the Northeast, kind of more based on logistics and where we were at.
Who's helping you out?
Who's helping us out? So we are doing this in partnership with Craig Newmark of Craigslist and Craig Connects.
Actually, Amanda, who's hitting the pavement? Who's actually setting up the meetings?
So we are. We're setting up the meetings.
Well, this is Women Who Tech is the organization behind
it. Women Who Tech is the organization behind
it. It's a 501c3?
It's a 501c3.
That's okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
And what happens now, the competition is that the submissions are today, there's judging, and then a first round, and then there's a selection process where mm-hmm. you get a dozen that go into the second round or something?
10 will be selected to come pitch November 9th at Microsoft.
In New York City?
In New York City, yep, in Times Square. It's an incredible space.
Of course they have a Times Square office.
Yes, they do. And we have incredible investors that are going to be the judges for that night. We have Joanne Wilson. We have Susan Line, who heads up AOL's BBG Ventures, Built by Girls. And we also have Catherine Finney, who spearheaded Project Diane, which was an incredible Kickstarter campaign. She raised $50,000 for this amazing documentary on rewriting the code, focusing on women in tech and diversity, and she also runs an accelerator called Digital Undivided. So we're super excited to have all of them. And
wow. And then one person ends up winning after the in-person pitches.
Yes. Yeah, so the final grand prize winner will receive $25,000 in cash, no strings attached.
That's not an investment. That's just
Not an investment. It's a pure contribution, courtesy of Craig. And then we are also taking the 10 finalists the next day over to AOL to do what we're calling a women's startup speed dating event, where they will meet one-on-one with investors, where they'll be able to not just pitch their startup, but also give them an opportunity to hear feedback about their startup and give them an opportunity to ask investors questions that they just don't have an opportunity to ask right now in a pretty low-key environment, and they'll be meeting with about 5 to 6 investors that morning. So I think it's going to be an awesome experience for them.
You mentioned there's a lot of fashion people. Mm-hmm. Is there a tech requirement in the plans that are being submitted?
Yes. So as part of our criteria, you need to be a startup that uses technology to rapidly scale. You can't be a small business, and you have to be able to make that distinction.
No service industries like consulting.
Yeah, so no consulting.
We
exactly. Unless the development web shop was developing a specific product.
Yeah.
Then we would certainly consider that, and that's pretty explicit in our rules. But you definitely have to be more of a tech-focused startup because really that's what investors are looking to fund. They really want to focus more on the startup and not really on the small business side. It's just a completely different distinction.
Yeah. So it sounds like this is taking a lot of your time. Are you neglecting your duties at the RAD campaign?
No, we're not neglecting our duties at the RAD campaign. I'm still heavily involved in a lot of our online strategy and leading a lot of our creative work. We also have an incredible team here at RAD that really also kind of takes the lead on a lot of this. So, and in terms of Women Who Tech, it also kind of comes in waves. We only do those startup challenges a couple of times a year. So this is definitely a busy period. And then after the startup challenge, we'll have a few month break, and then we'll gear up again for the next one.
Yeah, I mean, I think as someone who runs a company very similar to yours, I oftentimes daydream about, geez, what if we just developed a product?
And, mm-hmm.
which is sort of what we're talking to your friend Bill Strum about.
Right.
Is maybe getting something where we can generate a little extra revenue on the side and
mm-hmm.
Have something that doesn't require 100% labor input.
Sure.
To generate some revenue. So it must be kind of fun to dabble in that world and see these people succeeding.
It is. It's great. And it's also has reinforced some of the ideas that we've been talking about with the investor community and the tech community for years, that in order for us to create the best product for the masses, which is like these are all of our consumers, we need to do it from a diverse lens. And just some of the startup pitches that we have been seeing, it's so clear after seeing their pitches that women come at it, product development, from such a different lens, and they have different ideas that so many men would never think of because that's not their experience. And that's one of the reasons that we feel that the investor community is actually missing out on making a lot of money.
That's just completely.
Yeah. I mean, and women are like, you know, they make 80% of purchasing decisions at home. And so the investors are just missing an entire market of making money. And they're in the business of making money. So we hope that by having these startup challenges and pitch competitions and having awesome people like Craig Newmark behind it and Fred and Joanne Wilson, who are awesome investors, mm-hmm. that more investors will begin to look at women-led startups a lot more seriously and begin to invest in them.
What would you say to someone who, you know, the argument I hear is you know, that there's a culture inherent in this funding process that puts women at a disadvantage, and I think that's undeniable from some of the stats you've showed us.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you say to someone who might argue that, well, maybe women just aren't as interested in doing this kind of work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you could generalize and say it's very competitive. It, you know, it's kind of it's something that if there aren't many women doing it, maybe it's something that they just don't want to do.
So we're not really having that experience. Our experience, even in terms of going back to our web development firm, when we hire developers, most of our technical team is actually women. We never have a problem hiring developers and getting a diverse amount of candidates, particularly women. That's never been an issue for us. But we can talk to like a million firms in our space. We're always like, oh my gosh, we can't find any women developers. And I'm just like, well, what's your community like? If your community is comprised of white men, then that's what you're going to end up hiring. So the same thing actually happens in the startup world, is we have not seen any slowdown of women-led startups. In fact, we've seen an incredible rise in the number of women-led startups. There hasn't been a large enough study conducted that actually is able to break down the difference between women-led businesses and women-led startups. We've seen somewhere around 30%, but like I said, it's not like a final sample of all startups that are out there. But even if you were looking at the 30% data that was out there and only 7% of funding goes to women-led startups, I mean, you're still seeing like a complete disconnect.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed from some of your slides, it looks like you're going to be either talking to investors or companies who are trying to recruit women.
Mm-hmm.
And even just the way you might phrase your advertisement, or your job posting.
That's right.
Or where you're talking to people and who you're meeting.
Right.
So what are some of the tricks that you do to entice women to come work here? Or where do you find them?
Well, then I would be giving it all away. So
is it more just because that's the culture and the network that you live in, and therefore
I definitely think that's
exposed?
A big part of it. We are very, very active with the women in tech community. You know, people definitely know RAD Campaign for our work in the women in tech space. But I also think it has a lot to do with our culture as well. It's an incredibly inclusive culture, and we make that very apparent. We have something called the RAD Culture Deck, which actually talks a lot about our culture and has awesome photos, and you really get a sense of what it's like to work here. And, you know, we don't use words like that are very bro grammar-ish, you know, talking about, hey, we're looking for coding ninjas, you know, and, you know, 24/7 work, you know, environment. And there's these key words that are in job descriptions that are just so male-centric, that is such a turn-off to women that they don't want to even begin to apply to work in an environment like that, because they feel like they're just going to be surrounded by this programmer culture that they're just not interested in being a part of.
So that's free manicures and
no,
lots of kittens running around?
We do have kittens. We do have kittens periodically, dogs, and we have dogs, yep. But no manicures.
I'd be interested in a manicure.
Would you be interested in a manicure? Well, there's a place right down the street.
Manicetti Fridays.
They call me Magic Fingers at the workspace. Well, that's really cool. So, I mean, so when you started Women in Tech, I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, you identifying a need for an organization like this. But personally, did you experience some frustrations that took you down that road?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think one of my biggest frustrations was as a person who was attending technology conferences. It was frustrating to walk into a conference and not necessarily be, you know, yes, it was a problem to be surrounded by mostly men when I know that there were so many women in tech, but to have expertise shared with us that was only from a male perspective, as if, like I said earlier in the conversation, that women in tech didn't exist. So that was incredibly frustrating to continue to walk in conference after conference after conference, seeing that. And that's what really inspired me to do it. And like I said, there were definitely these backdoor conversations that were happening in the space about it. And I was just like, okay, we need to actually take action. And that's where I think my advocacy background really comes into play.
Just gonna say that, yeah.
Yeah.
So do something about it.
So let's do something about it and let's stop talking and not worrying about offending conference organizers. One of the first campaigns that we did actually quite aggressively went after Tim O'Reilly of the Web 2.0 Summit, where I had just gotten, and this is already after Women Who Tech had launched, but I had just gotten an email from him announcing the Web 2.0 Summit lineup, and there was, I think, like one woman. I think it was Charlene Lee that was going to be speaking. And I was like, where are the rest of the women? This is ridiculous. Yeah. And I started a Twitter petition. There was a tool at the time called Act.ly. I don't know if you remember it or not, but it was a great tool. It's sad that it's not around anymore. And you could actually launch a petition on Twitter targeting someone at Twitter, you know, with a petition statement, and then people could actually go onto it and sign it, and it would just tweet that person.
Wow, so that's why they shut that down.
And that's why they shut that down, exactly. But it did last for a while, and a lot of advocacy organizations used it really successfully, petitioning the White House and for all sorts of accountability campaigns. And so I took that and used that same tool to petition Tim to diversify his conferences. And like I said, it was at 9 p.m. at night, and he just got like hundreds of tweets, like, you know, within minutes. And he private messaged me, and he's like, Allison, let's talk tomorrow. So it kind of goes back to what I was saying. Like, if you continue to have these, yes, backdoor conversations can be helpful, but public accountability, as we all know, in advocacy is so important and part of that equation as well.
Have you seen any improvements in the situation since 2007? Is that when you started?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing improvements. You know, we worked with Tim's team to we brought in a bunch of women from Women Who Tech to help craft a diversity statement and work with their team on that. Shireen Mitchell, who is one of our awesome panelists and has been with us since day one of Women Who Tech, actually went in to talk with all of their conference organizers and do a diversity training with them. They would come to us and talk with us about upcoming conferences that they had and, who did we want to actually see a part of that conference, and asking for panel and keynote suggestions. And just over the years, it's definitely become a lot more public profile in terms of the media. The media has written extensively about it. And so I think conferences have felt some heat from groups like Women Who Tech and other groups that have been publicly advocating for this. And so we have seen, progress. Is it 50-50? Absolutely not. Is it are a lot of conferences now like more in the 30%, whereas they were like 5% before? Absolutely.
I bet N10 must be 50-50.
You know, N10 is actually, I think the nonprofit space does a better job of diversifying their conferences, and I think N10 is definitely a really, really amazing conference that really focuses on diversity.
If you have gender-neutral bathrooms, you're probably going to be more likely to have equal proportions presented. I feel like that is a maybe a litmus test.
Telltale sign?
Yeah, maybe that's the little flag to be like, maybe they get it.
I mean, I have definitely seen conferences moving in that direction to try and promote that, absolutely.
So just to get back to the, because I'm kind of curious,
sure.
To get back to the startup challenge, you've already gone through your first batch.
We have.
Do you follow them? What's the follow-up story?
Absolutely.
Any success stories come out first group?
Totally. So our grand prize winner was a startup called On Second Thought, which was co-founded by this amazing woman. Her name is Macy Peterson. And On Second Thought is an app that lets you take back text messages that on second thought you didn't really mean to send. It's brilliant. And... So Macy won $50,000. Since then, she has got additional investment. She is now, and her team, are now in the Bay Area, and they are winning all sorts of pitch competitions and meeting with investors, and I think that they are going to be completely funded in their seed round in the next couple of months. They just really, really have their product together. They have a strong user base, and I think they're totally going to succeed. I'm really excited about them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about the statistics and stuff that you cite in some of your presentations, I bet this would be a good opportunity to do some analytics, like follow these people, and if you've got all this data, I mean, do you track them and proactively like hunt them down afterwards and ask them to give you updates and things?
Yes. So we actually just did an update on the finalist probably about 4 weeks ago. Craig did an awesome blog post about, you know, where people were with their funding and just getting more startup advisors, getting traction with their product. And so they have all come back and said that the startup pitch competition, you know, really introduced them to more investors. Probably about a third have received more investment money, which about a month after the pitch competition is pretty impressive. And as I said, a bunch of them have also have increased. We've been able to connect people with startup advisors who are able to, you know, help them hone their product and also introduce them to potential investors.
How has the changing demographic in DC influenced any potential plans you might have? One of the big things I've noticed in my 3 years here is that there is a startup culture and community that, I mean, I don't know what it was like before, but from my perspective, it like sprung up overnight. We got like co-working spaces and incubators combining with other incubators. And I'm like, where did this come from? But also, what are the plans? Like I've never been in a space like that where this whole new community is kind of blossoming. And as an organization that's looking to work directly with women-led startups, how is that kind of factoring into some of the plans you might have for those either regional franchises you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think that the startup community is definitely blossoming in DC. I definitely agree with that. I still think a bunch of it focuses on kind of more government type startups and developing technology and products around that. I think it's also one of the reasons that we see, and On Second Thought is a great example of that. I see startups form here
and then they leave
to the Bay Area because they feel that they don't have the investment support in the DC area unless they were kind of, you know, fit a certain niche that the DC community fits. I would love to see that change, because I think it's sad, and I've told Macy this, I think it's sad that she feels that she had to move to the Bay Area to get the support that she needs. But I completely understand and I completely support it. So,
well, that's also where your pool of talent is in terms of people who, you know, you might be hiring. Probably early
it's
adopters.
Very, yeah, but it's also quite expensive to make hires out there.
That's true. Although it's not cheap here.
It's not cheap here, but it's more expensive out there because the cost of living is so crazy.
So it was $3,500 for a one-bedroom in San Francisco.
Or even more.
That was the average.
There was, it was kind of a joke of a post, but it was real, of an affordable house in San Francisco that was $350,000 that was being advertised. And it was this run-down shack that was not even, you couldn't even live in it. And that was $350,000. So just to talk about how crazy the market is in San Francisco in terms of living, it's just over
the
top.
Are you embedded here in D.C., or are you you ever think about packing up and moving out west or going up to New York or anything?
No. You know, we're definitely here to stay in D.C. We've been here for, at least 15 years.
And your family's here?
Yeah. Jared is the other co-founder of RAD. Would I like to also be based in other cities? Absolutely. That'd be the dream. Exactly. for different parts of the year. Yeah, that'd be great.
Go up, see the opera for the night and jet back.
And jet back.
I had this client in New York one time that flew me back on his plane. It was so unbelievable.
Oh, how funny.
We took a town car from Manhattan.
How come you haven't told me this story?
Airstrip right on the other side of the river in New Jersey, and got into a private plane and flew to Gaithersburg.
Mm-hmm.
And then got it picked up by a car there, and it was downtown D.C. like 2 hours after I left New York.
Fancy.
I can still be in D.C. 2 hours after I leave D.C.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Wow, well, it sounds like you're doing good things. And what's up tonight? I know you have to go soon, so you're going to be answering questions from people who are doing last minute submissions.
Yep. So going through those last minute submissions, trying to answer as many questions as we can, and accepting the entries so that we can start our judging tomorrow, because it's a pretty aggressive deadline. That the judging will go through October 6th, and then we announce the 10 finalists on October 7th.
Mm-hmm. I got a good question for you. So what if you have any advice for any women who are thinking about launching their own startup? What are the top three things you tell them?
So if you are thinking about launching your own startup, my top advice would be to find something that you are completely passionate about, because you are going to live and breathe this product for a very long time. And I also think it's important to not get too attached to your vision as well, just because products need to be iterative, and what you think that your community wants from your product may not be what they actually want. Mm-hmm. And so that you really need to be able
startup mentality.
Yeah, exactly. And so you need to be able to hear your community's feedback and quote unquote pivot. I know a lot of startups use that word, but it is true. You need to be able to do that, and you actually need to be able to do it quickly, because your community can totally revolt. And then I also think it's important to, as part of that feedback from the communities, you need to develop a thick skin and not be offended by, A, what your community says or what an investor says to you. I was reading a Medium post by the founder of Airbnb a couple of weeks ago, and he shared all of his, or at least seven of his rejection letters from investors, and it was great because, first of all, these investors must be kicking themselves. And it just goes to show you that everybody has an opinion, no matter who they are, and will not always see your vision. And you just have to find the right people to connect with that are going to see your vision and are going to help you and champion you.
And then, you know, so if being a female in this culture has its challenges, are there any advantages? Like, are there things that you think that you can leverage being a woman that that'll help you succeed in this arena?
So the biggest thing that I see in terms of being a woman is really just our perspective on products. Like I was saying earlier in the conversation, like I have judged a lot of entries for these pitch competitions and we've worked with a lot of startups and looking at their pitch
understanding
decks.
Understanding how buying is done. And
it's not even that. It's just more about the vision of the product. So yeah. I just feel that women and men, they have very different ideas of what products are gonna succeed, and I think it's based on just our different experiences of living in this world.
So if the majority of the products, let's say, are being developed by men, that potentially leaves a large segment unexplored.
Exactly.
And potentially less competition.
Exactly.
For that space.
Exactly, and that's one of the unique advantages that I think women have in this space. And that I think it needs to be tapped more, and that's what we're trying to encourage with the Women Startup Challenge.
Are you an investor in any of these things?
I've just joined an angelist syndicate. Her name is Arlen, and that it's her syndicate, and she is going to be backing women and diverse startups from the LGBTQ community as well. And so I'm excited for her syndicate to get off the ground and see what startups that we're going to back.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Should we ask the question, Brian? Why don't you ask this question?
So every guest, since we thought of this, that we've had on the show, we ask one question at the end, and that is if there is a nonprofit you'd like to give a shout out to. Nonprofit.
Besides Women Attack.
It seems like everybody we have on here is directly involved with a nonprofit.
I gotta say, like, we had Aaron, who's the salesman from Black Mesh, and he basically named, like, their biggest nonprofit clients.
That's so funny.
So not the first one you think of. The second one.
There's a ton of organizations that I'm a huge fan of. I'm going to highlight a small one that probably most people haven't heard of. They're called Democracy Initiative, and their mission is to work with all sorts of nonprofits from the environmental space, from women's organizations, any type of organization that has a large user base, in getting voting to be part of their priorities as an advocacy organization. Because as an advocacy organization, in order to get our legislation passed, we actually have to elect elected officials that are going to believe in the issues that we are going to be advocating for. And if people aren't getting out to vote, then we have a Congress that doesn't truly represent people. And so Democracy Initiative works with organizations to help make that one of their priorities as part of their advocacy campaigns. And so they're working with Greenpeace and the Sierra Club, Communication Workers of America. And I think that is super smart. And I'm really excited to see what they're going to do. They're about a year and a half old.
Based here in D.C.?
They are based here in D.C., and we are working with them on their new website redesign. So, yes, they are a rad client, but I think
deserving nonetheless.
Exactly. But I think that they have tapped into something that I think is unique, and also something that needs to be done, because we have a problem in this country that not enough people get out to vote. And I think we're seeing the results of that in our Congress right now, which I do not think accurately represents the American public. I think it represents a small minority, and it's a problem.
Awesome.
Great, thanks.
Awesome.
Oh, a couple more things.
Sure.
How do we reach you? Twitter?
Sure.
Facebook?
So you can reach me through on Twitter at WomenWhoTech. You can also reach Rad Campaign on Twitter as well at Rad Campaign, and we also have a Facebook page. And then our website, radcampaign.com, and our website for Women Who Tech is womenwhotech.com.
And your cell phone number?
Nope, can't give that out.
All right, well, this is a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me. It was awesome.
Thanks, Allison.